in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. We take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. The next reading is from Colossians chapter 4, verse 5 to 6. It's in the way you act towards the outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. The last Bible reading is from 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15 to 17. Hearts set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect, keeping a clear conscience so that those who speak maliciously against your good behaviour in Christ may be ashamed of their slander. It is better, if it is God's will, to suffer for doing good than for doing evil.
Well, good morning. How's everyone doing? Hey, great. Someone's great. That's good. Right. Well, I'm doing really good. I had a really good, restful weekend. I got to go to Omaha Beach. Really nifty. And I got to stay in this really flash, snazzy house thing that Glenda found for me. And it was really nice. And it was just a really good time. And it was just a good time for me to have just a little tiny break. And yeah. So, as you know, we're in between series. We did the Tinker Tailor Scripture Lie series about the trustworthiness of Scripture, and we're coming up to the Impossible Faith series, but I needed to have some more weeks to prepare that series, so I've been doing some filler sermons, and these sermons just come from the requests from people who have asked me, Mark, could you do a sermon on this topic? So just so you know, I take requests. So if there's anything you're interested in, like a Bible passage, a topic, anything, I'm willing, I want it. It's always easier to preach things people want to hear than to preach things I want to say. So I encourage you to please let me know what you're interested in, and I will put a hold on a series. I'll do whatever if it's important enough to you. This sermon is about evangelism. I've had some requests. Mark, can you give us some more advice about how can we share our faith? And it's really interesting. I'm not any sort of pro on this, but I can give maybe some insights. And I'll be going through these notes that I've compiled here. And you know what's interesting? As a pastor, the number one question I really hate people asking me is what do you do? You know, when I go and meet people and I see new people and they ask me, oh, what do you do for a living? And I have to be honest, I don't like answering the question for two reasons. The first reason is when I say, oh, I'm a pastor, all of a sudden I feel embarrassed because, not because I'm embarrassed necessarily about the Christian faith, but because I'm embarrassed because a lot of pastors have done a lot of stupid things in the past. And if you say you're a pastor, all of a sudden sometimes I feel like I'm being associated with that. And that's tough. And maybe for you guys, maybe some of you feel, you know, I'm embarrassed by what other Christians have done. And so you're kind of embarrassed to even admit you're a Christian. And I can resonate with that. But another reason why I don't necessarily like saying what I do for a living is because it instantly does often. Oh, I'm a pastor. Oh, you're a pastor. And then religious debate right there, right? And this happened actually just a few weeks ago. I went to go play hockey. I play hockey during the week, and we went to a pub after, and I just was hanging out with some of the hockey players, and one of the people asked me, Mark, what do you do for a living? And he had some cool job where he gets to go all over New Zealand, and then it got to me, and I said, well, I'm a pastor. And he's like, oh, that's great. And then he went into this, like, religion is evil, and it's bad, and Destiny Church, which... Right? And I don't know anything about this church, but it's always brought up everywhere. I'm going to go attend it one Sunday or something and just understand what I'm always getting labeled with. But anyway, and he just went into this sort of, you know, religion is about controlling people and stealing money, and it's bad and it's evil and this and that. And, you know, and I got into this, you know, the conversation with him. And you know what? At the end of it, I didn't really feel good about it, because even though at the end of it, I got him to admit, you know, religion isn't all bad. There's a lot of good things. Christianity can be very rational and reasonable. But I think I kind of pushed him too hard on a lot of questions and stuff. And he kind of, you could tell he kind of felt, because at one point he finally said, you know what, I just don't want to talk anymore. And then we talked about other things, and we still had that good relationship, and, you know, and I scored on him a lot the next week, and everything was good, but I kind of didn't feel good, because it just didn't end on the note that I wanted it to. So I just, as I give you these pointers, just know that I'm not a pro. I'm not professional. I can't just win people to the faith or something like that. But this is just some things I've used in the past that have worked for me. Now, one thing we should know, and what's interesting, is people are never the enemy. They are victims of the enemy. Okay? We should never look at people who disagree with us, people who are non-Christians, as like pure evil, or they're just something to be won or something like that. They're not the enemy. They're the victims of the enemy. Okay? They're kind of like the people who are the casualties of a war. Right? They're not necessarily the enemy. They may be civilians or what have you, but they're the victims. And we are in a war, but against the ideas that people have, never the people themselves. As we see in our passage in 2 Corinthians, we're called to tear down arguments, you know, but seasoned with salt, right? To avoid, to give unnecessary offense unless the message itself is offensive. You know, we're not supposed to go out and offend people, you know. What often people get the impression of is that evangelism is, you know, I take this Bible and I just start hitting Jono, right? Believe, right? And that's not the way we're supposed to do it, right? We're supposed to try to be as gentle, as conciliatory. We're supposed to be kind and winsome. You know, someone should be like, wow, I may disagree with that Christian, but just, they're genuine, they're nice, they're good. That's how we're supposed to approach things. But sometimes the gospel's just offensive. Sometimes people just don't like it. But let that be the reason they're offended, not your personality, not your demeanor. And that's a challenge. That is a real challenge, to take down ideas and arguments while making the person feel honored and respected, regardless of what view they hold. But that's what Jesus calls us to. That's tough. How do we make someone feel good about them knowing that you completely think they're wrong? That's tough. But that's something that Paul and Jesus calls us to, because we are supposed to be witnesses. We're supposed to be ambassadors to the Christian faith. What is an ambassador? Anyone know? Representative, right? A representative of one's country. Right? So if an ambassador, let's say the ambassador to Canada comes to New Zealand, right? And let's say the ambassador, he gives some great speech. He's this great speech guy. He says, rah, rah, New Zealand, rah, rah, Canada, rah, rah, relations. And everyone's like, yeah, right? But then the ambassador goes that evening, gets totally hammered, totally pissed drunk, drives, runs over a young kid, you know, crashes his car into wherever they're keeping the Rugby World Cup trophy, you know. And it's just a total loser outside of the speech. So it doesn't matter how good, how amazing his speech was. If you're not a good ambassador, if you act like an imbecile, you're being a bad representative, not only of yourself, but your whole country. And so as Christians, we need to be careful about, also, even though we may have good reasons to believe what we do, we got to have a good character about it. Does that make sense? When we're sharing our faith, we need to know when to wait. This is a passage that Jesus has. Sometimes it's a controversial passage because it doesn't entirely sound like Jesus. But this is what he says in Matthew 7:6. Give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. For if you do, they may trample them under their feet and then turn and tear you to pieces. Sometimes people just don't want to hear the Christian gospel. And Jesus is telling us, Be mindful of that, because actually it's a big waste of time if you're pushing something on people who just don't want anything to do with it. And what I want to do is, whenever you're in conversations with people, you want to discern the reasons for their resistance, for why they don't want to listen. And this is very key. You got to start to become very good at reading people at where they're at. For example, if someone doesn't want to hear the gospel message, you need to ask yourself, well, is it because of intellectual hurdles? Right? For some people, they can't believe the Christian gospel because they think it's just not believable. You know, it's basically, they think you believe in some sky fairy who created a zombie Jesus guy and he killed himself so that he could save you from himself. And like, they just think it sounds crazy. It sounds bizarre. And so they need you to help them with those intellectual hurdles. Some people, and so you need to try to provide evidence, find experts, do something to talk to this person if that's their hurdle. Some people have an emotional repulsion to Christianity. For example, maybe they're really angry at this Destiny Church, right? The guy I was talking to, he had an emotional repulsion to Christianity. He felt, you know what, I just don't like Christians because of what they do, because they control and they steal money and blah, 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 blah. And so if that's their objection, you need to resonate with that. You know, you need to be willing, you know, if someone says, I feel ashamed, I just can't handle that the church has caused this war, did this, or blah, blah, blah. And what you need to do in that situation is appreciate their objection. You know what? I agree. I don't like how that church abuses its members either. You know, just try to show some empathy. Sometimes we want to just defend everything because we're Christians and they're on our team, per se. We feel like we have to defend everything that is done in Christ's name. But sometimes the case. And so you need to show some empathy. You know what? I agree. I understand the power of your objection. People, they just don't want to be accountable. You know, I don't want to be told how to live. Right? There's some people like that. You know what? I have my way of viewing the world, my way of doing things, and I don't want anyone telling me what to do. Right? Some people, that's their objection. So you need to appreciate that and try to come to grips with that. People are just arrogant. You know, I can't be so wrong about something so big, right? How could I be wrong? This is such a big thing. There's no way I could be wrong. You're wrong, right? You know, maybe that's how they're like. And so you need to start then remembering Jesus's saying, don't give to dogs what is sacred. Be careful, because if you just start giving something to someone who is like that, they might just spit it right back in your faith, and you'll walk away from that conversation feeling like crap. People, this is a large amount of people here in New Zealand, I think. I'm not searching because I'm safe and secure. I just don't care. My life's great. I got the internet. I got YouTube. I got Facebook. You know, I just sit in my bed all day, watch TV shows, you know, got to watch NCIS or... I don't know what shows are popular. What shows are popular here? What's a New Zealand show that's popular? That's not American. Does anyone even know? There you go. Shortland Street. Oh, yeah, Shortland Street. I don't need anything. I have Shortland Street. Best show ever, right? I know nothing about this show. But, you know, a lot of people are just apathetic. And so what you need to do is you need to try to reach into that apathy. You need to try to show that there's... It's not good to be apathetic about these questions. For example, about whether there's a God or there's a purpose in your life isn't a question you can be apathetic to. For example, and those of you who are parents might resonate with this more, if you see a burning building and someone comes up to you and goes, hello, you know, I think your child is in that burning building. Saw them walk in there 10 minutes ago and they haven't come out. Now, all of a sudden, you got to make a choice, right? You can't be apathetic, because if you're apathetic, that's a choice in itself, right? You either got to go, oh my goodness, my child is in that burning building, and I got to go in and get them out, or you got to go, you know what, I think you're just full of poppycock. But you got to make a decision. You can't just be like, well, I don't know. My son's in there. Oh, he's getting burned. No! No, you can't be like that. You have to actually make a choice, right? And so sometimes... we have to try to pull people out of their apathy and make them realize these are important questions. Why am I here? What is my purpose? Does anything happen to me when I die? Those are things you got to really wrestle with. You can't just ignore those questions. Those are the big questions. You will radically change how you live your life depending on how you answer that question. Right? You know, if there's a purpose to your life and you're not living to that purpose, that's bad. But if there is no purpose, well then, you know, there's all sorts of ways you will change how you live depending on how you answer these questions. So you really need to address that. So if someone's apathetic, those are some ways you can maybe suggest how to get out of that apathy. Some possible conversation starters. I've put some conversation starters here. Now, I don't encourage you to just go up to people and just say these things. You know, random person. Hey, I think God is love. No, they'll just think you're crazy. Okay? But if you're in a conversation and you're talking about spiritual things and any of these starters kind of seem like they would apply, they might be useful to bring up. What are these? First one, God is love. And love is deeply personal, completely relational. So how would an infinitely relational, personal God reveal his or her love for us? Through a person we could relate to. And you just bring that up. And you know what this will do? This isn't going to convince someone to become a Christian, but what it is going to do is it's going to get a conversation going. Because maybe they might go, I don't think God is love, or I don't think there is a God, or blah, blah, blah. But this will help steer the conversation. And then it also helps you steer the conversation in a way that maybe you're comfortable with, namely promoting that God is a loving being. I think moral crimes should be punished, but I know I've committed moral crimes. I love Jesus shows me God's desire to take my punishment away and give me a fresh start with God. That's just a good way to maybe start a conversation. And they may not like what you're saying. They may think it's crazy, but it's a nice, gentle way of saying what you believe. Three, there's nothing like church. People who don't have anything in common coming together to be better versions of ourselves by being mentored by the teaching and examples of Jesus. Help each other grow and together help others in practical ways. Amazing. I can't think of anything else like it on the planet. Right? Maybe you're just trying to promote the church, trying to promote why you love church. And it's just a good, because sometimes people are like, why do you even go to church? It's right? One way to possibly start a conversation about why you think church is wonderful. Maybe you could talk about our fundraiser we just had, right? You know, and just talk about, yeah, I love how our church gets involved in things like that. And try to steer the conversation that way. Or starter four, a religious leader called the end of his own religion. I don't think there has been anything like that to happen in the entire history of world religions aside from Jesus himself. But if I'm reading the Bible right, that's exactly what it says he did. What's crazy about Jesus is he's, what nationality was he? Right? Not Chinese. Jew. Right? He was a Jew. And what does he do? What does he call people? He says the temple's going to be destroyed. He's basically calling for the entire end of the Jewish religion. Azu. I mean, he's completely against this idea of you got to do X, Y, and Z, Z to get the bits of God. He's completely against that idea, and it's completely unique. All other religious leaders try to promote the religion, but he's just saying no. Very interesting. Why would he do that? What is he saying? What is it about this guy? Why would people follow him if he's telling them to stop doing what they're... It's just weird. You can do when you're dialoguing with people. And if you have any questions while I'm talking here, just lift up your hand and just be like, Mark, you're crazy. Bye. Right? It's self-refuting arguments. When you're talking with people, often people have these catchphrases that are popular in the culture that you hear all the time, but actually they're self-refuting. And what do I mean by self-refuting? I mean, if I say, I don't speak a word of English, that statement. I'm saying English, right? The statement refutes itself. Just by saying the statement, I've proved the statement wrong. That's a self-refuting statement. So, for example, sometimes people say there's no truth. There's no absolute truth. So just respond. Is that statement absolutely true? Right? Science is the only way to know truth. Scientific statement? Or is that a philosophical statement? Because if it's a philosophical statement, which it is, then that statement's false. Beliefs are just products of how they were raised. You get this all the time. You're only a Christian because you were raised a Christian. Were you raised to believe that? People's beliefs are just a product of how they were raised. That's a common mantra in the West, and a lot of people in the West believe that. So, is it only because they grew up in the West? Religions are equally true. So what about Jesus being the only way is true? You see, all these statements kind of refute themselves. Do you see that? And you can just, if you're wrestling with that, just stare at the statement, and you'll see how it refutes itself. And so you got to be keen. You got to know when you're talking with people. Often people will whip out these statements completely self-refuting. And if they're self-refuting, it's irrational for them to base an argument off them. Big thing I like to say, and I talked about this in my first sermon I ever came to when I came here, was you need to ask questions, right? You need to ask questions of people. This is the example I use. I said, you know, often as Christians, we feel like we always have to be on the defensive. Like we're the ones always making the claims. We always have to be on the defensive. So when someone says, you know what, the Bible's false or something like that, and all of a sudden we feel like we have to defend the entire Bible. We got to defend the entire history of the Bible. We got to defend every passage in the Bible. And it's so hard for ourselves. But imagine what you could do if you just asked a question. Like, mean the Bible is completely false? What do you mean by that? Can you point me to a passage that you think is false or bad or wrong or something like that? And you notice when you ask a question like that, all of a sudden you went from having to defend the entire Bible to just the passage they're objecting to. Okay. You threw a cracker at me. Okay. If someone says something to you, ask them a question, what do they mean by that? I can't stress the importance of asking that question. You should say that question 20 times before you go to sleep every night. What do you mean by that? 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 Because people mean all sorts of things that you have no idea what they could possibly mean. Because I don't believe in God. Well, what do you mean by God? What kind of God do you not believe in? Because maybe I don't believe in that God either. Right? Like, who knows? I mean, there's all sorts of things. You believe in, I think the Bible is anti-women or something like that. Well, what do you mean by that? What is anti-woman to you? You know, if you just start trying to defend the Bible without even knowing what they mean with their objection, it's just going to crash and burn. I guarantee it. I've seen it countless times. Question, a level 2 question you could ask. These questions are to help you discover and express their reasons. So you're asking for reasons for why they hold their beliefs. So how did you come to that conclusion? Okay, you don't believe in this God. Well, how did you come to that conclusion? Why do you not believe in this God? Can you give me a reason? By asking questions, you take the burden off of you and you put it back on them. We always feel like the burden needs to be on us. We need to do the defending all the time. And sometimes you do. But you don't need to do the defending until they've actually come up with a reasonable objection. And to ask, well, how did you come to that conclusion? Why do you think that? Why would you think X, Y, or Z? Why would you think that? Amazing how many people actually don't think about what they're saying, Christians included. I found that 90% of the time I can just shut down the conversation by just asking, why do you think that? They go, right? And that's it. That's all they have. That's how it works. It's Christians too. You know, I believe, you know, God is love. Why do you think God is love? Okay? It is in the Bible, and it's in John, the Gospel of John, right? It's a good passage to know. But, you know, so many people believe so many things without actually knowing why they believe what they believe. And so don't let people just object to the Christian faith without them giving you actual reasons why they think that, okay? But on the upside, that should make you much more willing to start thinking about why you believe what you believe. Questions that help you communicate your own beliefs. So just saying, you know what? Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. Instead of saying it like that, you know, you could say, you know, have you considered that Jesus might be who he said he was? More gentle, right? You know, can you help me figure something out? You know, Jesus is this great guy, and he said this thing about being the way, the truth, and life. What do you think he meant by that? Just by trying to state your opinion in the form of a question takes a lot of the load off. Because if you just come out and say, Jesus! In our culture, that's kind of just too in your face, right? But if you do it in the form of a question, it kind of diffuses the situation. Mark, I'm going to ask you to practice that because there's homework. Something that I've learned that's very effective for me is standing and rephrasing their objection. I found that this has stopped so many potential explosions and misunderstandings. And anyone ever has an objection to your Christian faith, try to understand their objection. Really understand it. This is a good habit to get into. People appreciate it if you take the time to fully understand what they're trying to say. Right? Do you like it when people try to understand what you have to say? If you say something and someone goes, no, and they take no time to consider what you're thinking about or what you're saying, doesn't that bug you? But if they go, oh, okay, well, that's interesting, blah, 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 did I understand that right? Okay, good, now I can go, okay. Also, when doing this, try rephrasing their objection first to see if you understand it, and then try to rephrase it in a logical argument form. Discuss the various steps in the argument and see if the steps in the argument demand the conclusion or maybe if one of the steps is invalid. For example, let's say someone objects to Christianity being the only way to salvation. What would the objection look like in argument form? And I've put it here in the notes. So in argument form, it would be if there was a loving God, he wouldn't reveal himself in only one religion, step one. Step two, Christianity says that God has revealed himself in only one religion, Christianity. Step two, therefore, Christianity must be false. That is the objection put into an argument form. And then ask them, is that your objection? Do you agree with that objection? And until they say yes, don't go anywhere. Try to get the argument into a form until they say, that is my objection. That is what I disagree with. That is what I think. And once you have them in that position, that's because you can look at the argument. You can discuss the argument. You can discuss the points in the argument. Objection has been broken down into an argument. It becomes much easier to discuss. For starters, you could ask the person, well, why think a loving God wouldn't reveal himself in only one religion? Why even think that? What's your rationale for thinking that? Suggest, do you think it might be possible that God wanted to reveal himself in ways that weren't contradictory? Or you could take a different route. You could question point two and say, have you considered that God has revealed himself in more than one religion, but that only Christianity has the full revelation of God? I mean, those are all possible ways that you could look at this argument to take it apart. And it becomes very easy to take an objection apart when you've broken it down like that. So it makes the person feel like you've actually taken the time to really understand what their objection is. Because often, you hear them give an objection, you think they're saying something else, you start responding to that something else, they think, this person doesn't even know what they're talking about because that wasn't my objection, and then they start complaining, and then you start complaining, and then everyone's screaming at each other, and then swords are pulled and you slice each other's necks. You know? At least that's how it used to go. So it take the time to really understand what is the objection? Take that time. You would appreciate if someone took the time for you, and so you should take the time for them. Think about if you're a Christian, someone just came up to you and just said, the whole Bible's false. Would you? And they didn't give any reasons, they didn't take any time to consider the position, and if you go, did you ever read the Bible? No. Have you ever been to church? No. Have you ever even thought about maybe if Christianity could be true? No. Christianity's false. Are you going to take Are you really going to give that person the time of day? No, you're not even going to consider what they're saying. But if they were to like, you know, I don't believe in Christianity, but I've been really wrestling with this particular aspect and blah, 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 and what do you think about this? All of a sudden, you'd be much more willing to talk to them. You might not agree with them, but you'd be more willing to talk to them. You know, I've given you some technical ways of how to run a conversation, but most people don't get into that depth of evangelism. Some people just do what is called the apologetics of John. First, simply tell what you know, what you have experienced. You know, just people, you know, this is what I have experienced in the Christian life. This is how it has changed me. This is how it has affected me. This is why I find it so attractive. It's just, this is how I feel when I'm part of it. Step two, you invite people to join a movement, a fellowship, a family. And for many people, belonging precedes believing. Think about it. For those of you who are Christians, when you became a Christian, first not feel like you belonged at all, and then you became a Christian? Or did you belong? Did you feel like, you know what, I belong here? And then you became a Christian. And for a lot of people, that's the way it goes. They feel like they're part of a community. They feel like there's actually something to this. That's how most people come to faith. Like, you know what? This is a legit community, and I feel a part of this legit community. Emphasize the positive. You emphasize the joy that you have when you come here. I also want to emphasize to use we language when possible, especially when speaking negatively about our human need. You know, it'd be like, you know what? You're a sinner. You! In the red shirt. Sinner! Doesn't work well. Maybe it used to, I don't know. But not now, right? It's more, try to use we language. Try to be like we or me, right? It's less offensive and stuff, right? You know, we are sinners. We, the human race, have fallen. We, not Marty Bing, right? No, that's not good. Marty's a great guy. Negative, you can be specific, not when you're negative. Explain why you think Jesus is significant to you. I don't know, and only you can answer that question. Get into the homework. Is there a question so far? I want to tell you another story. In the military, and this is just to help. This is just what I consider one of my failures. Terry, one time I was on an exercise. It was the middle of winter, which in Canada really sucks. You know, it's like minus something. There's snow everywhere. I'd sleep outside, and I was outside for like days. And we had to dig a trench. Digging a trench when the snow is, when the ground is rock hard, is not fun. It sucks a lot. It's really hard. It's next to impossible. Anyway, so we dig this trench, and the way things work in the Canadian military is you have sort of your platoon, and then you kind of have your squad, your thing, and then you have what's called a fire team. And a fire team is usually you and another person. Sometimes it's a third person if you have an odd number in your squad there or what have you. Fire team, I had two people. Girl. And trench, or there was one kind of already made. I forget exactly how it ran. But when we were done, we had some break time. And I was in university at this time doing religious studies. And I was sitting in the trench, and I pulled out a book, a book by Alvin Plantinga. If you probably don't know that name, but he's a famous Christian philosopher. And I'm reading this Christian philosophy book in the trench, freezing, but it's free time, which rarely ever happens. So I was taking advantage of it. My team asked me, "Oh, what are you reading?" Perfect opening. It doesn't get any better than that. What do you read? Like, right there. We're in a trench. You can't go anywhere. Right? We have to stay there. What are you reading? And you know what I did? Nothing. And I closed it, and I put it back in my bag. Because I was embarrassed. To be honest, I was embarrassed. You know, I didn't want, you know, it's also kind of edgy. You're not supposed to necessarily talk about religion in the army and blah, blah, blah. But you know, it would have been fine there. And we actually had a chaplain come by just like about a half hour before, right? It was a pretty religious, it was like God was like, here's an opportunity. And then the girl was like, oh, no, what were you reading? And I was like, no, it doesn't matter. And then it dropped. Interesting is, young guy, about 20, 28 probably, about my age now, I'm 29 though. And he was a bigger guy though. And about a week later, heart attack. Really bizarre, because he's in the army, and he's 28, but he died of a heart attack. He's in the military, he gets a military funeral. As a unit bugler, I had to play at his funeral. I had to be there. And I just thought, you know, and it's not like I would have converted him. Probably wouldn't have. It was just kind of a really raw emotion for me, where here's a guy who is asking about the Christian faith, and I just, you know, it's not important. A week later, he's dead. And I had to be the one who was at his funeral playing this last post in honor of his life. And I'm not trying to guilt you or something like that, but I kind of view it as a failure because I was given this opportunity in its face, in the butt. And I will never, and it's weird because I was in school, you know, everyone at my old church looked up to me as, oh, he's the guy who evangelizes and blah, blah, blah. And now I'm a pastor and I'm supposed to be the guy. And yet I still struggle with evangelism because I get embarrassed and blah, blah, blah. But I still try to do it. And I encourage that those of us who are Christians feel that. I feel it's tough. In a culture that isn't entirely friendly to the Christian gospel. Side, you get killed, right? You know, that's a plus. Jesus does say if people don't want to hear, don't waste your time. So I'm not telling you just start going out and go to work and just tick everyone off and be like, Jesus, right? No, because they don't want to hear it. That opportunity comes up where there's the freedom to maybe that you think, you know what, this is an opportunity. You don't know how that not taking the opportunity might have eternal consequences. And I guarantee you, people can't believe the gospel if they never hear the gospel. What is that? As you look in your passage here, here's some homework. I need you to read through it. And basically, this is one you practice at home. Maybe practice with your partner or something. But practice responding to the following challenges with questions rather than assertions. Far you can get in a conversation with a skeptic using questions only. It's not rational to believe in God. There's no proof. Science explains everything, so we have no need for God. All religions are basically the same. It doesn't matter what you believe as long as you believe something. God is the life force that flows through everything. We are all part of it. Jesus never even existed. Influenced by Buddhist and Hindu teaching. When putting the Bible together, the Catholic Church edited a lot out of it. Truth for different. No one should try to tell someone else what to believe. My own beliefs, I'm a spiritual person. You should do what makes you happy as long as you don't hurt anyone else. Religion is just about controlling people and taking their money. If you're interested about sharing of your faith, you should be able to have some sort of response to these types of questions. Maybe you have those questions. They're totally fair questions. You should them. But answer them by using questions. Not in a cheap little five-year-old, why way, but to make a point. This week, with your partner, with your friends, try to practice this. Point. How do I get better at evangelism? If you don't do it, you will make mistakes. I've made so many mistakes. You have no idea how much of a loser and a jerk I've been. But until I was that loser and a jerk, I would have never have known. And as slowly over the years, I think I've gotten better at hopefully sharing the gospel. Do, but only if you do it. Lord God, I just thank you for today. Thank you that we're able to discuss evangelism. This is a tough thing sometimes for Christians to do, Lord. I pray that you would use this material to help those in our congregation to have more willingness to share the faith, Lord. And for us here who aren't Christians, who this sermon may have seen rather, I just pray that they would know that we as Christians are trying and striving to be just to show that they're loved. And just know that if you're a non-Christian here, you are loved. And we're so glad that you're here. And we just pray that you would continue to come and that you would become a part of our community, even if you're not a believer in Christ. Thank you so much that you're here. And I pray that you would resonate with the gospel message of Jesus. I pray these things in your heavenly name. Amen.